Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Hope you're doing well. Hope you got to watch some new good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Just you and me this week. It's going to be another short show. I am still recovering from the fun that was Indie Bard Fest's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, which ran last weekend. So big shout out and big love to my cast and crew, my whole cast, you know who you are, to Glenn Dobbs, to John Clare, to Marta Hamilton, to Jay Hemphill, and all the gang at Arts for Lawrence for making this theatrical Shakespearean party happen. And we had a great time, two performances in and two performances out because of the weather. And it still worked out. So anyway, I'm very, very happy the show was able to go off without small hitches. Well, small hitches, but it still went off splendidly. And I loved everybody involved. And we'll have Indie Bard Fest on the show probably in October, a little closer to October, to preview the full season. And I want to talk. There's a transition that was just kind of weird, and at least once Midsummer closed, and it'll be the crust of the gist, the majority of what I'm going to be talking about on this week's program, and then we'll get to the grab a pencil portion as I always do. So the day after my production of Midsummer closed is when I find out about the death of actor David Warner, and. Sometimes it's just all in the timing. And David Warner was one of those actors who had quite an impression on me at a young age and then just kept going when it comes to his work. I do remember seeing Nightwing in the theater with my dad, but here my first, gosh, like the first three impressions I had of David Warner's work. And, of course, I've talked before about the connection between artist and audience, because he was that guy. And, at first he played a character that scared the hell out of me. And then I liked him. I liked seeing him in other stuff. And he was that guy. And then you committed the name to memory. So, again, I remember seeing Nightwing, but I don't remember his performance in it. It was more about the bats. But, of course, in 1979, same year he did Nightwing, he played Jack the Ripper in Time After Time. Fun, fun film. Malcolm McDowell's H.G. Wells. His time machine is stolen by Jack the Ripper, who winds up in modern-day San Francisco. There's a disco scene. Shout out to Dr. Wes Gehring. And it's also with and then H.G. Wells hooks up with Mary Steenburgen, which is always great. So anyway, so Jack the Ripper, then the evil genius in Terry Gilliam's Time Bandits in 1981. And I also forgot he played Murphy in The French Lieutenant's Woman, which I also saw in the theater with my dad. It happens. But I remember Meryl Streep and Jeremy Irons more than that. And then, of course, he was Ed Dillinger, Sark, and Master Control Program in 1982's Tron. And Dr. Alfred Nesseter in The Man with Two Brains. So That's quite a thing. But before that, I had forgotten. And then he would just pop up in things, and it would be cool. He, of course, was in Tom Jones. He was the title track of Morgan in 1966. appeared as Constantine in the film version of The Seagull that Sidney Lumet directed in 1968. I bring this up, and I sent an email to my cast and crew, even though the show had already closed. But there is a noted film version of, I think, a BBC production of A Midsummer Night's Dream that was released in 1968, the same year he did The Seagull and The Fixer and Work is a Four-Letter Word and The Bofors Gun. But he played Lysander in a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, along with your lovers include our Helen Mirren and Diana Rigg. And if I remember, Diana Rigg was Hermia, Helen Mirren was Helena. You had a youngest I've ever seen her, Judi Dench, all green as Titania, and Ian Holm as Puck, delivering one of the fastest If We Shadows monologue I've ever heard. And it's just, it felt like it was shot at some lord's castle over the weekend, kind of like a Hammer film. It's very inexpensive. It's shot on one very large location. So. Anyway, but it's worth checking out. It's a fun oddity. Of course, he was the Reverend Sloan in the Battle of Cable Hogue. He had the uncredited character of Henry Niles in Straw Dogs. The film version of A Doll's House from 1973. He was, of course, the priest who lost his head, literally and figuratively, in 1976 as The Omen. Was Captain Kessel in Cross of Iron, Silver Bears, the films I just talked about, Concord 79 as well, the film version of The 39 Steps, The Island. Just kept working. Did a lot of TV. The Company of Wolves, Summer Lightning. Hannah's War, Waxwork, started doing those films. Played the father in the 88 version of Hansel and Gretel. St. John Talbot in Star Trek V. Yes, I'm scrolling through. Star Trek VI was Chancellor Gorkon. It's just quite the career. David Warner was one of those guys that was able to bounce back and forth between stage, movies, and TV. To the Golden Globus guys, and I'll talk about your show this week in a minute. Yes, he was Lord Aegon in the TV movie version of Beastmaster 3. Appeared in Money Talks, Scream 2, and then, friends, yes, he was Spicer Lovejoy in James Cameron's Titanic, which I think every headline had him as a Titanic actor. So, yeah, did a lot of tunes. Yeah, was the voice of Dr. Frankenstein in Toonsylvania, Wing Commander, always brought, and then even when working on BC level stuff, brought his gravitas to whatever he was working on. 2001's Planet of the Apes, I'm still scrolling, Cyber Wars, the TV movie version of Sweeney Todd. Just constantly working. And his last credit, 2022, The Loeb in Teen Titans Go. You, Me, and Him was his last film in 2017. So salute to David Warner. And I want to make sure she doesn't get lost in the shuffle. Actress Mary Alice also passed away this week. This is another one. She did a lot of stuff, but there's one thing that's always been that's in the headlines because it's the biggest film. Her first film was The Education of Sonny Carson in 1974, was Effie in the original Sparkle, 1976, was in Teachers, To Sleep with Anger, and not enough people have seen To Sleep with Anger. Check that out as well, because I believe that is one of the Criterion titles. Was the nurse in Awakenings, the school teacher in Malcolm X, had a role in Bonfire of the Vanities. A Perfect World, Life with Mikey, The Inkwell, Bed of Roses, Down in the Delta, but as is always going to be known, Sunshine State, but always be known as the Oracle from The Matrix Revolutions. So salute to Mary Alice. Bob Rafelson. Bob Rafelson was nominated for 2 Academy Awards as a director as a producer for 5 Easy Pieces, as well as writing 5 Easy Pieces. Long career, 13 credits as a producer, 20 credits as a director. Yes, this is the man that helped develop The Monkees. Think about that. And yes, he's the one who directed The Monkees film from 1968, Head. Yep. and you have to be in the right frame of mind, and I don't mean with certain substances, but it helps. But no, it is kind of what the monkeys were trying to do on TV, but they took it and ran with it with Head. Of course, the follow-up to Head would be Five Easy Pieces, King of Martin Gardens, which is I finally got to experience and is one of my all-time favorite films about siblings. Criterion has a box set based on the BBS work. Stay Hungry from 1976, the remake of The Postman Always Rings Twice, which has a fun notice in the podcast You Must Remember This about erotic 80s. Did the video for Lionel Richie's All Night Long, Black Widow from 1987, Mountains of the Moon, Man Trouble, which I need to revisit. It was just kind of, I remember it being kind of Jack Nicholson coasting. Blood and Wine, which was the last Rafelson film I saw and really, really liked. An underrated kind of film noir with Jack Nicholson, Michael Caine, Stephen Dorff, Jennifer Lopez, Judy Davis. That's from 1996. No Good Deed was his final film. But yeah, so was a producer on Hearts and Minds, which won a Best Documentary Oscar in 1974. So yeah, Bob Rafelson, quite an influence. And if you look up the film books of Easy Riders and Raging Bulls and all those stories about the 60s and 70s, influential filmmakers, Bob Rafelson's in the mix. And last but definitely not least, Paul Sorvino. And much love to Dee Dee Sorvino and the entire Sorvino family. So I got to know Paul a little bit via Zoom. So call it what you will, Zoom friendship or Zoom acquaintance or what have you. But I got invited to be a regular panelist on the podcast Drinks with Dee Dee. Dee Dee's podcast, and which she describes as a happy hour, as a bar conversation on Zoom. And I've been kind of the token lefty on that program. And if she's not at home or they're not at home, they're wherever Paul is filming or appearing at a convention or things like this. And Paul would show up sometimes and talk a little bit or make a brief appearance and then go about his way. He's Paul Sorvino. And I got to chat with Paul Sorvino via Zoom, and that's kind of cool. I know I got an A in name dropping at Ball State, the Ball State University. But I remember the first time I was on to discuss James Bond movies, and he would chime in with stuff. And I tried not to turn it into the Chris Farley show, but it would happen from time to time. There's always a running bit on when will Dee Dee bring up Goodfellas on her show, and it happens faster than you think. Or sometimes she's poked into it, especially if we talk about the Academy Awards. But I remember saying with Paul on the line, I paraphrase, which was terrible. Paulie never moved fast. That's because Paulie never moved fast for anybody. And then, which he was a good sport and nodded. And then when Dee Dee brought up The Rocketeer, she wanted me to say Paul's famous line, and I said, not with Mr. Sorvino on the line. I yield the floor to Mr. Sorvino. So he did his line about being an American and not working for some commie, or some Nazi. But anyway, check out The Rocketeer. You need to check that out. But the moment that I always remember was we were doing St. Patrick's Day, and we were there, and we were wrapping the show up, and I had a moment to say and ask Paul if he would sing "O Danny Boy" because I knew he had operatic powers, and he kind of chuckled and said, normally I warm up 20 minutes before doing something like this, and he did it, and it was cool. It was really cool, and I got to tell him. I mentioned earlier, we all have a different path with artists. We discovered them at different times, and my path with Paul Sorvino is different than your path with Paul Sorvino. And I'll do a little scrolling and I'll get to the story. First film in 1970 was Where's Papa? Then he appeared in The Panic in Needle Park, Cry Uncle, Made for Each Other, Darling, A Touch of Class, which elevated him, The Day of the Dolphin, The Gambler, the James Caan film, The Gambler, Sky Point, the James Caan, Shoot It Black, Shoot It Blue, I Will For Now. And then we get to 1977's Oh God, as the Reverend Willie Williams. This was my first connection to Paul Sorvino's work. And unsolicited, he started doing some of Reverend Williams's lines, and it just made me giddy. There's a line that he had that he says to John Denver when John Denver's character invades his church and is hauled away by security, and Reverend Willie says that this poor boy is ill, which is something my dad and I have said our whole lives since seeing Oh God. So yeah, Oh God was my first introduction to Paul Sorvino. And then the other one was following that up a couple years later, where he played a police detective in the TV movie Dummy, which I remember was LeVar Burton is a deaf guy who is accused of murder. Don't forget Blood Brothers from 1978. And if you get a chance, look for Slow Dancing in the Big City. I know, especially post Goodfellas, Sorvino got, kind of got typecast, A.E., also known as Made a Living, doing, crime-oriented stuff. But Slow Dancing in the Big City is an underrated romantic drama where he is a columnist and she's a ballet dancer, and, you know, two different worlds. It's directed by John Avildsen, the guy who did this, I believe, the film he did after Rocky. So, and John always did underdog stories if you look at his film career. But yeah, it's a nice little picture. And I was able to tell Paul I actually saw that and liked that as well. The Brinks Job, Lost and Found. He was in Cruising, which I forgot that he was in, and revisited that years later. It just came out on Arrow Blu-ray, and I purchased it earlier this year. Reds, Melanie, I the Jury. I the Jury was always on cable, like 24/7. So a lot of that. Turk 182, The Stuff, A Fine Mess. Dick Tracy. He had a working in friendship with Warren Beatty. Yeah, 1990. He did Dick Tracy as Lips Manless and Paul Cicero in Goodfellas. And if you saw his interviews prior, and still, just a big, gregarious teddy bear of a guy, and take out the teddy if you crossed him. But Goodfellas, he's amazing in Goodfellas. And then a year later, The Rocketeer, uncredited in The Firm. One of our favorites, and this goes out to my buddy Abdul-Kim Shabazz, you bring up Paul Sorvino, he will bring up Henry Kissinger in Oliver Stone's Nixon, which I also enjoy a great deal. Of course, he was Capulet in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. Not enough Capulets, not enough Montagues. Money Talks, God, yeah, Most Wanted, Bullworth, Knockoff, yeah, he worked with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Script Fellas, get it, Plan B, C-Spot Run, Long Shot, The Cooler, yeah, he's heartbreaking in The Cooler as the aging male crooner in a small hotel casino in Las Vegas, The Wild Stallion. Yes, he was Santa Claus for Jenny McCarthy in Santa Baby 2. Kill the Irishman. Mindville. How Sweet It Is. Once Upon a Time in Queens. A Winter Rose. Yes, Dee Dee, I'm not mentioning all of the titles. Sorry, love. Sicilian Vampire. See, brings gravitas to films like Sicilian Vampire. Lost Cat Corona. Undercover Grandpa, yep. Anyway, as you hear, a lot of titles. And 1, 2, 3, 4 in his IMDb of either completed post-production, that sort of thing. And the last time I got to connect with Paul via Zoom, we were talking about the Academy Awards, and Dee Dee asked me what were some of my favorite Oscar moments, and I was able to tell them that watching Paul's reaction to his daughter Mira winning the Oscar, and she gives a shout out to her dad, And I got to say, that's me with my M all the time. And so, yeah, a long life, great career. And for the handful of times we connected on Zoom, a sweet man. So salute to you, Paul. Love to Dee Dee. Love to the Servino family. You won't be forgotten. You can't be. So thank you so much for all of your fine, fine work. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we grab a pencil, let's find out what's going on in your neck of the woods. Well, in your neck of the woods. All right, let's go around the horn before we grab a pencil. At the Tibbs Drive-In, on screen one, Thor, Love and Thunder, and Jurassic World Dominion. Screen two, Nope, and Black Phone. Screen three, I love these pairings. They want the kids to go to bed early after the first one. Screen three, DC League of Super Pets and Elvis. Screen four, ooh boy, Where the Crawdads Sing and Top Gun Maverick. All of that is at the Tibbs Drive-In, at the Skyline Drive-In, DC League of Super Pets and Elvis. That's happening at the Skyline Drive-In. Over at Can-Can, we got Nope, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Fire of Love, Cleo from 5 to 7. Coming up on the 30th, Raiders of the Lost Ark, presented with Near East Area Renewal. And, yeah, so all that is happening. Oh, coming soon, Mayberry Man on the 30th, Fistful of Dollars on August 3rd, Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen, A Journey, A Song. That is opening next week. Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca is happening August 5th through the 10th. The Goonies on the 6th, 8.5, the 12th through the 17th. Maximum Overdrive with Vanity Rex is August 18th. Milford Graves' Full Mantis also August 18th. August 19th through the 24th, Hitchcock's North by Northwest. Naptown Narrative Season 2 premiere on August 20th. Mean Girls presented with the Damien Center on August 24th. August 26th through the 31st, Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal, Trip to Bummerville. The Indianapolis Black Documentary Film Festival, August 28th. And that is all happening at the Can-Can in Indy. And at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, depending on when you're listening to this, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., the original 1962 film version of Cape Fear. August 5th and 6th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Grease, with 20 and 30-year-old high schoolers. August 19th, Friday, 7:30 p.m., Miss Congeniality. Saturday, August 20th at 2 p.m., a members-only event, so I'm not going to read that. Saturday night, August 20th at 7:30 p.m., The Terminator. Friday and Saturday, August 26th and 27th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Wizard of Oz, all at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully something good that is new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Okay, little thing here. I'm going to let you know on this. Oh, the Golden Globus guys. Golden Globus Theater has their new podcast. And this week, because it's the last edition of Griffmas in July, they covered Barb Wire. Yes, the Pamela Anderson film. The one and only starring vehicle of Pamela Anderson. And it's funny because I just watched Pam and Tommy, which was on, I believe it was FX. I got a little more respect for Pam Anderson because of what she had to go through. Tommy Lee is still kind of a lunkhead. But, man, Barb Wire is the last film I walked out of. I saw it at a dollar cinema in Naperville, Illinois. And when I realized that they were going to push all their chips in and just make Casablanca, as fun as it is to look at Pam Anderson at times, I just left. I got up and took my time back, as Gene Siskel once said. And it's interesting to hear the guys on Golden Globus, somebody in their lives who liked Home Improvement era Pam Anderson, didn't mention Baywatch and didn't mention this. Anyway, we get there. But anyway, the guys, and I say that this was the last film I walked out of. The last film I got up and left before the credits ended, and I don't really count it. It's the final scene from Pay It Forward when I realized they were recreating the damn Coke commercial, "I Like to Teach the World to Sing." So that for me, that doesn't count because it was just the final moment. I was like, all right, I've had enough. But, yeah, I think I lasted 30 minutes of barbed wire. So, anyway, you can hear the guys eviscerate barbed wire and 90s fashion and looks on Golden Globus Theater at Gand G Theater. Anyway, check them out. They're fun. I'm hoping to be on the show again sometime soon to talk about stuff. But anyway, July 27th, I get a note that it's an anniversary of the film. Oh yeah, the film Contact was released, and kind of unsolicited, and maybe when we actually talk this, we'll talk about this. But Lady Macbeth apologist writes, "See Matthew Soucy, I'm not the only one who loves Contact. I just remember if you've not seen Contact, and South Park made fun of it." And which kind of fueled the fire of, you know, all of that journey just to find out it was just her father, and then Interstellar kind of went doubled down on that with better special effects and a better film. So, yes, Lady Macbeth apologist, I hear you. Still don't care. My wife enjoys Contact more than I did, and we're still together. Jose Alma Press, and by the way, Joe, I will get to you. I just finished the play. I will get to your book. Anyway, Joe writes, Jose Alma Press writes, "Pretty Baby and Personal Best." Now there's a double feature. Andy writes, "Just watched Too Old for Fairy Tales, a sweet Polish coming-of-age flick about a chubby teenage esports athlete and his odd family. Loved it." Cool. Thank you there, Andy. And I believe, yeah, that's it on Facebook. We go over to, or on Twitter, we go to Facebook. We start with my buddy Dusty. Hey, SpongeBob the Musical happening at Richmond Civic Theater opening next weekend. Anyway, Dustin writes, "Ah, Wilderness" from 1935 and Little Miss Sunshine. David writes, "Blade Runner Final Cut, Blade Runner 2049, and Sexy Beast." Everin writes, "Nope." Magnus writes, "Resident Evil and my uncle was a vampire." Nancy writes, "Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I wanted to watch it again as soon as it ended." I'm with you on that, Nancy. Right now that's my favorite film of the year. Jared writes, "As They Made Us." Jeff writes, "A Simple Plan." Wow. Just wow. That might be, Jeff, my favorite Sam Raimi film, and I'm glad you discovered it. Jason writes, "Baywatch the movie, too much fun, and it's naughty too." Melissa writes, "Baywatch is one of those where you enjoy it more when you go in with zero expectations." You're right about that, Melissa. But yeah, I didn't like it as much as you did, Jason. Dan writes, "California Split and the Bridge at Remagen." Eric writes, "First Views, The Snows of Kilimanjaro, and Ethan Hawke's mostly marvelous documentary, The Last Movie Stars." Yeah, I got to get on that, Eric. I want to watch that with my wife, if that's possible. But yeah, that's the one, of course, about Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. Rewatches, Black Narcissus and La Eclipse. Judy writes, "Rachel Getting Married and Mass." Oh my gosh, hopefully that wasn't a double feature. Kevin writes, "The Last Bus." Jed writes, "Finally watched several Marx Brother films I hadn't seen before. The Coconuts, Animal Crackers, Monkey Business, and Horse Feathers. Highly recommended each one." Jed, I'm glad you finally got to experience those. I got to see Animal Crackers and Horse Feathers in a theater. Well, in a college screening with my dad when I was a kid. And the Marx Brothers box set is a must-have if you don't already. So glad you got to check that out. Grace writes, "I don't remember the last movie I watched. I've been trying to find a copy of A Walk to Remember for a few weeks to no available, but I've been watching too much ER. That's okay, Grace. I've been watching a lot of Sopranos this week before I jump back into movies. That happens. Nikki writes, "Nope." Kathleen, my cousin Kathy, writes Michael Clayton. Trudy writes Deliverance. David writes, I had a great Prime Day find. The Kubrick 4K box set of three films, 2001, Full Metal Jacket, and The Shining, plus a 4K set on the Cornetto trilogy and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Roxana writes, finally watching Schmigagoon while I'm off this week. I'm glad you got this week off. Jessica writes, Jaws and The Lost City. Amanda writes, The Edge of 17 and Infamous, as well as Cell, which I believe was also known as 1407 for you fans of Stephen King. And Amanda also watched Goodfellas. Salute to Paul. Alice writes, Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank. It is so incredibly full of traditional tropes that somehow comes along to being funny. And they made a cat that looks like Mel Brooks, also voiced by him. Thank you, Alice. Ronnie writes, Nope, Top Gun Maverick and The Gray Man. Melissa writes, Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, Chips, and The Gray Man. Kate writes, no movies this week, but got sucked into binging Love is Blind on Netflix. It happens, Kate. Taylor writes, Heaven Knows Mr. Allison, Prisoner of Azkaban, Down Periscope, The Aristocrats, Five Against the House, Here Comes Mr. Jordan, the new version of Father of the Bride, it's exceptional, as well as Eraser. Lou Harry writes, Captain Blood and one-third of At War with the Army. Rachel writes, Enter the Warrior's Gate, Francis Joins the WACS, and Ant-Man, as well as Full Metal Alchemist. Daniel writes, Sliding Doors, Never a Dull Moment, Emile and the Detectives, Madame Curie, 101 Dalmatians, Two Patches London Adventure, The Truth About Cats and Dogs. Mary writes, The Fly. Started The Fly too, but didn't get into it. That happens. Nick writes, Marcel, The Shell with Shoes On, and Read My Lips. Chris writes, The Way We Were. Bill writes, Doctor Strange. Patty writes, Thor, Love and Thunder. Jackie writes, Father's Little Dividend. Dana writes, The Sting. I told my kids beforehand that it was about a bee, and they were like, really? No, it's not. Eric writes, Belfast and Whiplash, and adding J.K. Simmons is phenomenal. Yes, it is. Gene writes, A Ghost Story, an hour and a half that I will never get back. And Eric agrees. Great minds think alike. And it's funny, I thought you were talking about the film Ghost Story, which had Fred Astaire, Melvin Douglas, and, oh, God, a couple others. But no, I don't think it's that. Kevin writes, no movies, but lots of The Old Man, which seems like a movie. Thank you there, Kevin. Dylan writes, Fangs versus Spurs, featuring the makeup of Julie Powers and Joe Estevez. Joe Estevez did not do the makeup. That was Julie. Let My Puppets Come, featuring a musical number with the most disturbing Pinocchio save Roberto Benigni. Yes, I hear you there. Doug writes, Claire's Knee. I'm in the middle of a film fest and will include those next week. Thank you, Doug, for filling me in on that. Mark writes, Goodfellas, of course, and Deep Water. Ron writes, Three Came Home. Aaron writes, 300. Linda writes, Where the Crawdads Sing, and deemed it unexciting. Gary writes, Pirates of the Caribbean on Strange Tides, Trap Flicks Party, Evangelion 30.0 plus 1.1 Thrice Upon a Time. God, get your titles straight, filmmakers. The Aristocats, From Fat to Finish Line, 1976's King Kong, AC/DC Classic Album Review, Back in Black. Yeah, that's just a short documentary. Nope, The Zodiac Killer, Night at the Museum, and Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb. Bonnie writes, Thor and Jurassic World, Jurassic World Dominion, but she spelled it capital D, capital U, capital M, Dominion. Kind of like Demetrius for my Midsummer cast. Jamie writes, The Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, Romance on the High Seas, Mr. Malcolm's List, Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood, Gosford Park, Scooby-Doo and Kiss Rock and Roll Mystery, oof, Scooby-Doo and the WrestleMania Mystery, Karina, Scooby-Doo and the Gourmet Ghost, and Leap Year. So, yeah, hi, Giada De Laurentiis. Kurt writes, Chef. Eric writes, Legend. That's the one with Tom Hardy. Abby writes, Big Business and Deadpool. Joshua writes The Gray Man, Body Brokers, American History X, and House of Gucci. Linda writes Almost Angels, a 1950s Disney movie. Randy writes Get Out. David writes The Gray Man. Mike writes First Reformed and Camelot. Michael, not Mike, writes They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Tarzan and His Mate, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Mission Impossible, The Bombardment, Hell's Angels, Operation Mincemeat, Moonfall, and Mission Impossible 2. And if you like They Shoot Horses, Don't They? First off, hi to Judy and hi to Jane. But Mud Creek Players is doing the musical Hands on a Hard Body, which is kind of the modern version of They Shoot Horses, Don't They? So there you go. Simone writes The Heat. Alan writes Elvis and the French Connection. Those are two separate films. Christian writes, I've been more in series mode this week, and so I don't know if it counts. It doesn't count, Christian, but it's never stopped people from telling me what they've been watching this week on the film show. I've been watching The Silent Sea, Lost in Space, and D.B. Cooper, Where Are You? Mulveen writes, Ernest Hemingway's The Killers is a two-disc set. I have this collection, Mulveen. Yes, the 1946 version with Burt Lancaster and Ava Gardner, and the 1964 version with John Cassavetes, Angie Dickinson, Lee Marvin, President Reagan. Yes, right, Ronald Reagan's last film. And, no, he's good in it. He's okay in it. The film is better than him. And then John Frankenheimer's Seconds. Yep. And then Mulveen, I'm not going into fully what Mulveen was writing, but Mulveen wanted to let you know both DVDs are available at the Marion County Public Library. Never forget your public library when it comes to movies, friends. Jared writes the Bob's Burgers movie. Wayne writes Nope. There are at least three good movies in here. Jordan Peele didn't make any of them. Instead, shoehorned three good ideas into one ridiculous script. It shot beautifully, and the performances are top shelf, but the story is a show dumpster fire. Thank you, Wayne. Adam writes The Battle of Britain, major influence on Star Wars with a lot of very similar shots, but I'm sure you knew that. I'm glad you're spreading that along, Adam, that's another one, kind of like Dune. You know, I think somebody was reading Dune when they were writing Star Wars as well. But yeah, Battle of Britain's kind of an underappreciated picture. James writes Meatballs and Stripes. Hello, PJ Souls. Robert Muggy writes The Last Movie Stars and Tiggeroo, a film that was never made. Kurt writes 84 Charing Crossroad at the Bell Trace movie night. Today was the first Downton Abbey. And the weekly afternoon film as a prep for the new Downton Abbey film to be shown this coming weekend. I got to see a nice little production of 84 Charing Crossroad when I was in college. So that's cool. Christian writes Raiders of the Lost Ark at the Can-Can. Jesse writes so many good things, but my favorite was the Automat documentary at Can-Can Cinema. And finally, JJ writes What Happened on Monday, Nope, and coincidentally, Goodfellas on the Big Screen, the night before Paul Sorvino passed. Good note to end on there, JJ. Sky point to Paul Sorvino and the other actors, filmmakers we talked about earlier. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching. So hopefully you got some ideas as far as finding good movies that are new or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We did have a fun movie night with the three of us because Em's going back to college soon. But Em and my wife got in a conversation about the history of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl character. It did not start with Elizabeth Town, although it's been written about. And it's a cliche that has been brought up for the last couple decades. And we were trying to find older films with this character. And a few titles came to mind, like Bringing Up Baby, Breakfast at Tiffany's. And one that we wound up watching was Butterflies Are Free with Edward Albert and Goldie Hawn, of course, in that role. And M really loved it. In fact, they took my copy to take to college. And then the next night, coincidentally enough, because I did not persuade them, my wife did, we watched Almost Famous. So M got to see Goldie Hawn and Kate Hudson in two nights in two films. And the extended cut of Almost Famous, I'm happy to say. So that was Soucy Family Movies this week. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Stay good to one another. Stay hydrated. All that stuff. And, yeah, find some movies that are good, that are new or at least new to you, and falling back on old favorites. And we'll do this again next week. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Well, let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!